Coming to you via the internet and your friends at PipesMagazine.com, it's the Pipes Magazine Radio Show.
The show that doesn't only celebrate fools on April 1st, we do it all year long. Proof of that? Look at our host.
Now, I invite you to sit back, relax, the smoking lamp is lit. Here's your host, Brian Levine.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. Yes, the sometimes irreverent, sometimes educational, sometimes foolish, but always entertaining weekly pipe smoking broadcast. And I am your host, Brian Levine, reminding you, you must be of legal smoking age wherever you are in order to listen to this fine show. So if you're not, go ahead and turn it off now. Thank you. All right. This week in Pipe Parts, I got a question from a relatively new smoker listener, and it also kind of coincides with the Pipe Smoking 101 Revisited, so we get that in Pipe Parts. And then my guest this week is Rick Newcomb, and we get to catch up with Rick, see what he's up to, kind of get his take on the current pipe and tobacco market. And then music for spring, modified mailbag, because I am traveling, and rant, all that coming up on this week's episode of the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. And remember, listen, I don't care what kind of pipe you smoke. If you smoke a pipe and you smoke tobacco in it, you're a friend of mine. That's one of my rules. Everybody got it? All right. And we would love for you to share out the Pipes Magazine Radio Show with all of your friends and family and enemies and all that. And while you're doing that, Spotify ratings are much appreciated. I am going to read some of those Q&A things that show up on Spotify because I now know how to see them. Yeah, I learned that thanks to Kevin. Yeah, learned that. And iTunes, Apple Podcast ratings and reviews, always much appreciated. Remember, if you're new to the show, please stay current with the stay up to date on the current episodes, and then go back and get caught up on the previous ones as time allows you, so that way you're up to date on any news. For example, we've got a bunch of pipe show announcements, including the Capital Land Pipe Show. It's moved to June, and then in September, Sutliff and the Conclave of Richmond Pipe Smokers are having a weekend event, the second weekend in September, and then, the NASPC show will be in August. Next week, Chicago. Yeah. Yeah, next week, Chicago. and then we have Missouri Meerschaum with their 155th anniversary party coming up the end of September. And then the Las Vegas International Pipe Show. So remember, check on pipesmagazine.com, go to pipe shows. And if you have a pipe show or an event that you want listed in there, email Kevin, admin@pipesmagazine.com, and he'll get it listed on there for you for free. All you have to do is ask him. Or you can go into the forums there and do a, under the pipe events, you can go in there and put a post up in there. So do that. All right. Check those calendars. Hope to see a whole bunch of you at as many events as possible. All right, let's get the show rolling. So everybody sit back, relax, fire up a bowl. Thank you all for tuning in, and here we go.
There's nothing quite like working in my shop or smoking my genuine Missouri Meerschaum corncob pipe, an American legend since 1869. It's the coolest, smoothest pipe I've ever owned. Check them out at corncobpipe.com.
Since its beginnings in 1876, Savinelli has become more than just a pipe factory. It's become a lifestyle. From sourcing the finest Mediterranean briar and partnering with local artisans to acquire unique accents, to expanding their catalog each year with new innovative series, Savinelli produces high-quality Italian pipes that serve as a reflection of your individual tastes. With a portfolio that ranges from rugged designs fit for the outdoors to elegant pieces destined for black tie galas, Savinelli is more than a mark. They're a way to help you make your mark.
And we are back on the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. All right, pipe parts. This really fits into Pipe Smoking 101 Revisited. This comes in from Matthew, and he says, I have two questions in one email, but they are related. Can I get away with that? I am curious whether or not there are pipe sizes or shapes that certain cuts of tobacco are best suited for. For example, what is the best pipe shape or pipe size for a flake tobacco, or the best shape or size pipe for ribbon cut tobacco? Also, I'm having trouble packing flake cut. So let's undo the first one. All right. So I am the leading expert on my own opinion, and the way I formed my opinion is by listening to numerous people, numerous other pipe smokers for how they do stuff. And when you talk about the size or the shape of a pipe being perfect for a particular blend, there are rules of thumb that I always start people off with and say, these are the basic guidelines, all right? And this is where you should start. But your experience may vary. Your preferences may be different. So try other things, all right? First of all, smaller pipes, in my opinion, do much better with singular blends. So like a straight Virginia, or a straight dark fired blend, something that is just a single blend where you're not looking for a lot of differences or nuances with added, multiple different kinds of Virginias, or a Virginia Burley, or an English blend that has Latakia and then a base Virginia with a little bit of Orientals added in there. The smaller bowls, you just don't get the mixing of the flavors that you want. And the smaller bowls will tend to make a single thing a little bit more intense. So, and just a reminder, the smaller the area of the tobacco chamber, the more impact you have on drawing on it, the more narrow the burning area is, the hotter it's going to be overall. Yeah, these are all rules of thumb again. So what I want you to do is, for me with my Virginia Periques, I like a good medium-sized bowl. My 1.5 inch deep, 3/4 to 0.8 of an inch wide, and that gives me a good mixture of it. For the straight Virginias, I don't mind going to a smaller bowl. For the more complex blends, maybe one that has some Orientals in it and some other stuff, I'll go a little bit bigger. So that's where I start out as. I will also take a blend that is maybe too stout for me and put it in a wider, larger bowl, and that will mellow it, that'll bring it down a little bit. Or on the other hand, if I have a blend that is just not giving me what I'm looking for, I may try it in a much smaller bowl and see how that works. And you just have to try all these different combinations before you get to figuring out, this is what works for me. And then to further make it even more different, or more confusing, then you have the way a manufacturer may process their tobaccos may make it even more. you might want to modify it and adjust what you've done in the past for your favorite blend. This is also the reason why when I'm taste testing and reviewing tobaccos, it's really work, because I'm trying it. I'm trying a tobacco in different size pipes, different shapes of bowls, and so on and so on. The actual shape of the pipe, it's just the bowl that really matters, and then the length. There's a little bit of cooling on a longer pipe, so it's just really the shape of the bowl. And you may find that, like on a Dublin, it'll get hot towards the bottom, or in a volcano, it'll be hotter on top. So you gotta work all these different things in, basic rule of thumb. Now the second part of his question is, I'm having trouble with packing flake cut. Is there a certain type of pipe best suited for flake? Am I overthinking all this, and should I just pack any cut with any pipe? I have a Peterson 264, and it seems to heat up way more than, say, my Rossi 320. Also, only been smoking a pipe for just over a year, so it's a constant learning process with so many options. Love your show, and thanks for all your content, Matt. Matt, you are correct. You're overthinking it. Flakes, again, now with the differences that I talked about with the blends, now you have the variation to add in there of how much do you rub it out. How much moisture is in it? How coarse is the cut? Is it a kringle? You know, is it a flat? You know, like the cube cuts, or is it a crumble cake? You know, how much do you rub it out before you find out what exactly you like? So you've got to look at all those other variables that you're adding on top of the previous variables. So try all the different options. In general, again, look at if the flake is just a simple straight, primarily Virginia or primarily Burley, look at a smaller pipe and try just the tuck and fold and the twist and fold, or the rub out all the way or the rub out part way. Try all the different variations. Remember, when you're smoking a flake and you haven't rubbed it out all the way, it's going to force you to smoke a little slower, and you're going to tamp and relight a little more often because you don't have as much burn surface of the tobacco. So that tobacco is going to go out sooner. The difference between the two pipes, it could be down to just those individual blocks of wood, with one being with one handling the heat a little bit more, or, you know, one being a little more heat tolerant than the other one. And that can range in, you could have two identical pipes from the same factory, same shape, side by side, and you're going to get variations in those because the actual pieces of wood are not identical. You know, Mother Nature does not print out pipes, according to a 3D printer or a CAD thing. You're dealing with the actual blocks of wood that can actually vary from pipe to pipe. Same factory, same shape, same way they handle it. Things can vary. So if the Peterson is smoking a little bit hotter than the Savinelli is for you, my suggestion is slow down. Yeah, just simply slow down, or dry out that tobacco a little bit more and then slow down the smoking. Remember, moisture is actually where you're getting most of the heat coming off of the pipe. But if you slow down your smoking with it and pace yourself a little bit more and maybe dry it down a little bit, you may find the sweet spot for it. So even when you're looking at, at the beginning of your question, you were talking about the different tobaccos and what pipes they work in. Well, then when you get a pipe, then you've got to figure out, all right, what tobaccos, what packing technique works best in this pipe, and what moisture level. So you've got all those variables that you just keep working with until you try it. I'd also like to remind you that you're 1 year in, and it really took me about 5 or 6 years to hit my pipe smoking stride and really get it all tuned into the way I like it. So don't give up yet. Keep going. You'll get those magical bowls, but there's not one right answer. And remember, I'm the leading expert on my opinion, and I've just given you a whole lot of it. So thanks for the question. Hope that works out for you. Email me back if you have any further questions, and keep going. And in just a moment, my conversation with Rick Newcomb.
This is Internet Radio.
I'm Jeremy Reeves, head blender of Cornell & Diehl Pipe Tobacco Company. At Cornell & Diehl, we think the best things in life are better with age, and we are passionate about creating the best possible pipe tobacco available. Fueled by this passion, we introduced the Cellar Series, a collection of blends like no other. While the blends in this series are ready to smoke now, each one has been meticulously designed to optimize depth and complexity as the tobacco ages in the tin. Currently, the Cellar Series is comprised of Oak Alley, Chenet's Cake, Joie de Vivre, Old Grove, and Bourbon Blue, but we will be unveiling new additions to this very special series as time goes on. Pick up a tin to smoke now and save a few for later enjoyment, so that you can experience all the richness and subtlety each blend will reveal through the years. Cornell & Diehl's Cellar Series. The secret ingredient is time. Contact your local or online retailer for information.
We're back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, and joining us is the very noted author and doctor of pipes, Rick Newcomb. Rick, welcome back to the Pipes Magazine radio show.
Thank you, Brian. It's always fun to talk to you.
I'm trying to remember, and as we're talking, I'm doing my due diligence to find out when the last time you were on the show, but I think it's been a couple of years. So I just wanted to check in, see how, you know, see what you're doing. I know you're involved in a couple of, or at least one Zoom group or a couple of Zoom groups. I'm wondering if you can just anything new in the last few years that's excited you, or things that are interesting to you coming out of the pipe and tobacco world?
Well, I'm working on a third pipe book, and just sort of gathering ideas. And at a recent Zoom call, there's a collector from Chicago who also lives in Arizona now half the year, named Barry Kane. And Barry asked the group, when do you all think was the golden age of pipe smoking?
Ooh.
Different people had different opinions. You know, I immediately thought of those photos from the 1890s of miners going in and into the mines and with their pipes in their mouths, or coming out and smoking a pipe,
yeah.
Or little kids with pipes back in the Horatio Alger days. But then I also thought of in the 19-teens and 20s, you know, World War One, when Dunhill really became well known, and that era, the professors, the university students, pipes were all associated with that. Then we had the Great Depression, where pipes were the poor man's way to smoke, because you just needed one or two pipes, and you could just use inexpensive pipe tobacco. It would last a whole lot longer than cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then in the 40s, World War II, and Pipe Lovers Magazine, that era, they said probably one out of five American men smoked a pipe at that time. In the 50s, there were great pipes made. I mean, I've got some Dunhills from the 50s. And the 60s, same thing, up until about, what are we talking about, the mid-70s, you know. So it's hard to say what was the golden era of pipe smoking. However, and in this day and age, where all forms of smoking are lumped together and condemned, which I think is a great mistake.
Yeah.
The idea of pipe collecting has become something totally different. And I would say this is the golden age of pipe collecting. Now, on the smoking issue, I'll give you an example. My personal physician for many years was Dr. David Bosca, who was a pipe smoker. And during the COVID lockdowns and things, he died. He was 84 and pretty healthy. And I'm not sure what he died, whether it was COVID or what. He did at one point have, I think, prostate cancer, but I think that was, he was on the mend from that, but I'm not positive. But in any event, after he died, I've been looking around to get a physician, a general practitioner. And my wife recommended the local St. John's Hospital, where she had found a doctor she liked, and they have groups of doctors, can pick one, and or they sort of rotate in and out. And on the one hand, it's more convenient because they have all your cards and stuff on file, and you go one doctor or a different doctor, they all have the files, and you don't have to fill out the forms all over again and so on. Yeah. On the other hand, they have multiple choice things, a form that I filled out when I first went there. And one of the questions was, do you smoke? And I put down, I smoke about one or two pipes a day without inhaling. And that got me categorized as everyday smoker. So the minute I saw the doctor, he said, well, now what are you smoking? A couple of packs of Marlboros a day? Or, you know, I mean, that's what they think, everyday smoker. And so it's something very different. And I found it offensive, and I have tried, even with several doctors' help, to get the computer report changed, and it's almost impossible. So then one of the doctors said to me, just lie, just tell them you quit smoking. And so, you know, that kind of made sense. But anyway, so it's not the golden age of pipe smoking, but it's definitely the golden age of pipe collecting. I mean, there are just so many beautiful pipes, and eager young men and women who are making pipes, and I'm just so impressed. That part is really extraordinary.
Well, if you don't mind, let's kind of break this down a little bit and kind of go back over it, because you brought up some interesting time periods, because Alfred Dunhill was really the one that made a pipe a thing of luxury or a thing of durability and quality. So yeah, you know, before that, it was just, you know, pipe brands and, you know, local tobacco shop, go get a pipe. And then you got World War One and the Depression, which kind of slow things down. But post-World War II, I've always thought of that as the golden age of pipes and tobaccos, because at that point you have Dunhill and Sassini, and you have Barling and Camoys and Cheriton's coming up, and you got all these brands that are really trying to do better, make better, make prettier. And then you also have a lot of the tobaccos that we all yearn for kind of coming out of that same era. And then you see them in the movies. Yeah. So that's kind of always been my golden age. But what you've piqued my interest in now is, you know, we really are living in a time where we've got more tobaccos and more blends available than we ever did before. Is it possible to call this, instead of the golden age of pipes, call this the golden age of the pipe and tobacco enthusiast?
Yeah. That's because that's, you know, interesting. I was listening when I was working out the other morning, and you had notified me you wanted to have this conversation. And I was looking through the ones I hadn't heard. And I remember your interview with Adam from Get Piped, but I hadn't listened to the one from Nick from Get Piped. And I was very interested in that because I like Adam and Nick. These are bright young guys who are enthusiastic about the hobby and contributing a great deal. And what struck me, though, was when Nick said something like he's smoking about one pipe every 2 weeks. So he wouldn't be called an everyday smoker. So he'd get over that. But I thought, you know, and I know other people who young pipe smokers who smoke like three or four bowls a week or even one a day or something, very little. Back, you know, when I think back to the old days when we all smoked all day long, you know, not even thinking about it. And many of us still do. I'm just very interested in that so many of the younger enthusiasts are really much more interested in the collecting aspect and maybe studying about the various pipe tobaccos and cellaring the current stuff and so on. One point I want to make, when you mentioned about Dunhill being where people started paying attention to brand, well, don't forget, Peterson preceded him, and there was BBB and Lowe's. There were a few others who he was sort of chasing initially, and he did a marvelous job at building a brand.
Yeah, Alfred Dunhill and Walt Disney did not create the segment. They just made him better. Yeah, and marketed him better. Yeah. I remember on one of the Get Piped, I think on their New Year's resolutions, Nick's resolution was to smoke more. That a New Year's resolution has never been said before, but I've also got the same problem that you do, in that since we've moved, I have to find a new doctor, which means I got to go through filling out all these new forms, and I got to go and meet new, you know, primary care physicians, and then I got to go through the argument with them. I smoke a pipe, leave me alone, I'm not going to quit, but if your lawyers require you to say I should quit, go ahead, say it, get it out of the way, it's not happening. Yeah.
No, they are under pressure, too.
Yeah. Yeah. The legally, we're required to tell you that. All right. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we'll have more with Rick. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
For over 150 years, Peterson has welcomed all pipe smokers. It's the preferred choice of the thinking man and the everyman alike. And our workshop, too, is a place of hospitality and warmth. Hi, I'm Glenn Whelan, and for me, Peterson is a family tradition I've known since my childhood. My dad, Tony Whelan Jr., worked at Peterson for 53 years and has been my home since 2003. From sweeping our factory on a Saturday morning, to managing our store, to now steering our international distribution, I've seen the craftsmanship poured into each Peterson pipe. It lives in Jason's discerning eye as he handcrafts our silver accents and in Wojciech's able hands as he carves our rustications. It abides in Willie's grading and in Warren's papering. Peterson has welcomed us as contributors to its legacy, and it's a welcome we always extend to you. Cade Mila Falja, 100,000 welcomes, wherever you come from, whosoever you be.
We are back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, visiting with Rick Newcomb, Doctor of Pipes, and somebody who in just a few short days I'll get to see at the Chicago Pipe Show. Rick, how with the internet now and with Zoom groups and everything, how has getting ready for a pipe show changed for you?
That's a very good question. I think that in the old days, I remember bringing a lot of pipes and having a table and swapping them, selling them, trading. Now, I don't see, make a run to the bank, you know, to get some cash. it's become more commercial in that sense, which is not good, but that's life. But a lot of the commercial is for these young pipe makers who are, there's just so many talented ones. I've just blown away, and I, you know, want to spend time studying as many as possible and learning from them. On the other hand, I feel like I could teach what I know as a pipe smoker, you know, what I like. I mean, everybody's different. You know, we all have our preferences. I got an email over the weekend that was interesting from pipe smoker in Europe, who's a friend, who's said how excited he is to, you know, getting ready for the Chicago show. And he said he doesn't like to have a carbon cake inside the bowl of his pipes. And he reamed out two of them. And boy, was that hard work. And it took over an hour. And now he has a tobacco chamber bigger than the original. I thought, ooh, we don't want that. That means he scraped out wood. Yeah. Not just carbon. And so I wrote back, you know, just my own, the way that I do it, which is I smoke a pipe. I also don't like a big cake, a thick cake. So after I smoke a pipe, I let it cool down. Once it's totally cool, I dump out the ash. And then I'll use my finger and rub it inside. Or I'll take a pipe cleaner, especially a bristled one, fold it over and just scrape the sides and dump it out after each bowl, so that way a cake won't really build. But I also wrote in my reply to him that, now don't forget, that cake that's building inside the bowl that you see is also building inside the shank, the airway that you don't see. And this is one of the reasons that I'm so adamant about having an open draft hole. So in that case, I said, why don't you get a 5/32 drill bit or a 4.0 millimeter drill bit and just run it through after every two or three bowls to make sure that stays open as well. So there's just little techniques that I've learned, things that I like.
This is a problem that I run into, and I think this is a problem that a lot of pipe smokers run into when they're at a pipe show and they see an artisan pipe maker, you know, somebody that's made the pipes and they're not familiar with them. How do you evaluate the pipe as to whether or not it's, you know, one that you're interested in buying?
Well, the starting point obviously is my gut feeling. So if I look at it, I'm drawn to it. That has to do with the stain, the shape, the colors, the dimensions, you know, just the overall appearance. Beyond that, I will sometimes take a striped pipe cleaner, you know, where they have swirls around. Yeah. Like, have you seen those blue and white striped pipe cleaners or red and white striped pipe cleaners.
Yeah, they look like little barber poles.
That's right.
Yeah.
And put one of those in, and I look at the bottom of the bowl, and I look for three, what I call three white squares, where you would see three white squares after you put in this pipe cleaner. It's hard to say, but a whole lot of pipes do not have that. The ones that I like best, you know, the old, those high grade Danish, they almost always have the three white squares at the base of the bowl.
So that's saying to you that the alignment of the tobacco of the draft hole is just right with the bowl to allow that pipe cleaner to come out far enough that you see three sections of white on the tip of the pipe cleaner.
Well, that's part of the reason, but I'm not even sure about the alignment issue. I think, cause I've seen it with crooked ones too. I think it's more of a U shape at the bottom of the bowl.
Okay.
But not exactly the same as a U shaped pipe or a cone shaped pipe. It's hard to explain, but you know, it's one of those things just over the years, when you smoke a pipe for 40 years, you just observe different things. And so I was cleaning out a 6th-end pipe, and I had one of those swirled cleaners. And I noticed that in that case, I think it took 4 white squares. So then I took some other 6th-ends, and they all took 3. So then I tried the Bonord ones, same thing. Lars Iverson, same thing. Yes, Konovitz, same thing. Then I tried some of the other pipes that I wasn't all that crazy about, and they would show 1 or 2. And I thought, whoa, this is what an insight. You know, I mean, it's just like my friend Mitch Michelson said. He, when other people have the tobacco chamber, you know, how wide you want it to be. And there are a lot of discussions about millimeters and fractions of an inch and so on. And Mitch just said, no, just stick your thumb in. And depending how far your thumb can go down that bowl, it's what I like. I like one that where my thumb goes in.
Yeah, I heard Mitch say that. So I stuck my fingers in bowls and I figured out which finger I like. And God, I hope I don't gain weight. Because I know if that finger fits in that pipe, that's the perfect tobacco chamber for me.
That's what Mitch said.
Well, I had heard Mitch say that probably 20 years ago. So I took the pipes that I had that I really liked and realized that it's my index finger. And then, yeah, hopefully if I ever break that finger or I gain a bunch of weight, I'm in trouble.
That's funny.
And then of course, you know, it's okay. Once you're done looking at a pipe from a pipe maker, it's okay to say to that pipe maker, you know, great pipe. It just doesn't have it's just not for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's a hard thing for some. I know it's a hard thing for me when I stop and look at pipes and go, oh God, that's pretty, but it's just not a shape for me or size for me or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So also going back, are you, when you're leaving now for Chicago, and do you kind of have some pipe makers that have reached out to you and said, hey Rick, I'm bringing a pipe for you, or I've got a pipe I want you to look at?
No.
They just leave you alone?
Yeah. I mean, nobody's done that. There are some that I want to take a look at only because I've seen them and over the years I've become more and more impressed by them. So especially, you know, some of the younger ones. When I say younger, I don't mean actually in age. I mean younger as pipe makers, newer ones.
Yeah. Or for us, we're getting to the point where most of them are younger anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Do you want to share names, or are you keeping those secrets?
No, I mean, I'll give you an example. My brother, who was a medical doctor, lived in, for a number of years, he's always lived in the Pacific Northwest. He lived in Bonner's Ferry, Idaho.
Wow.
And then moved. That was a little too rural after 20 years for his wife. So they moved to Sandpoint and Coeur d'Alene. Mm-hmm. And I think they lived in Bayview or something, which is in between the two. He worked at hospitals in both. But unfortunately, just like my mom, he got Alzheimer's at a very young age, say mid-60s. So he retired young and then died last year. So my wife and I went to the funeral, which was in Bonner's Ferry. And then we rented a car and drove through Montana. And Montana is just a very beautiful state. I had a couple of friends from high school who went to the University of Missouri. University of Montana. One lives in Missoula, the other lives someplace near there. And so we all got together and then we drove through the state of Montana. We stayed in Butte. There's the Copper King Mansion is a B&B place. And we stayed there. It was just really a lot of fun. In fact, the owners of the Copper King Mansion, they're in their late 80s. And or at least mid 80s, and they were so spry. And the husband is a pipe smoker. He made his own pipe, and we sat out on the, you know, in the back. This was in the autumn. It was in October, and it was warm enough to sit and have a pipe and have a nice conversation. And this Copper King was, I think his name was William Clark, and he became a U.S. senator. And there was another Copper King. And they had tremendous rival. I'm trying to think. He was an Irishman. He came from Ireland when he was 14. Marcus Daly, that was his name. And he founded, they both founded huge copper. They were like the Rockefeller of copper. But anyway, I was so intrigued by Montana. I learned that Butte, Montana, at one time, because of the copper, had more electricity or more light bulbs than lights on the streets in Paris or New York at one time. They had more millionaires than, you know, so all this stuff we were learning about Montana. And then at the Vegas show, I met a young man, Micah something, who makes pipes called Yeti pipes, something like
that. Yeah.
And he couldn't have been nicer. He said he started when he was 19. He's 31 now. And his pipes looked very interesting. So there's one example of somebody whose pipes I want to look at, or Nate King. He seems to make very nice pipes. I guess Jared Coles, but Jared's become really kind of almost he's becoming a legend, you know. We'll see. There are so many, and I'm open to all of them. I admire right off the bat anybody who can make a pipe that smokes. The other thing that, as I've gotten older, I'm sort of interested in my family roots. And so funny, yesterday, Carol, my wife and I went to a movie called Cabrini about this woman, Francesca Cabrini, known as Mother Cabrini, who was a Catholic nun in, I think in Sicily or someplace in Italy. And she, in this movie, which was very interesting, about the prejudice against the Italian Americans or the Italians who had come to America around 1890. And as I'm digging into my roots, my great grandfather and grandmother, Vincenzo Lombardo and Josephine Sansari Lombardo came to Ellis Island in 1882 and then wound up in 1885 as homesteaders in Nebraska.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So then, they came from Palermo, Sicily. And so I Googled, pipe makers in Palermo, in Sicily, and there's Amarelli is there. So if they're there, I'm going to look them up and talk to them about it. There's a pipe maker there. I don't know how to pronounce his first name, but Giochino Soro. And we have corresponded by email. He wrote to me and said, I reached out to him, and explained this about Vincenzo Lombardo and so on. And I said, you make beautiful pipes, S-A-U-R-O. pipe. He's got a website. They really are. He's a very accomplished pipe maker. I asked Jeff Graysick if he had heard of him. And he said, oh, yeah, I have. And he's very good. So he, on his website, he talks about learning from different people like Tom Eltang, who's obviously a legend and a very, 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 very good pipe maker. But who's the fellow who comes to Chicago periodically? And I know him and like him, and I've never really studied his pipes. So I reached out and said, are you coming this year? And he has not replied yet. So my guess is he's not coming. But just if these guys aren't coming to Chicago, I will try to get them to come to Las Vegas. Who I'm trying to think. I'm just having a blank. So in corresponding with Giacchino, he told me that his two of the people I read it on his website in his blog were Mimo and Gabrielle. So I wrote to him that they were both friends of mine from the Chicago Pipe Show, and he wrote back that he had contacted them and they said that. He said they vouch for you as being an honest person and so on. So I told him to listen to my pipe audiobooks that many pipe makers have told me that's what they do. They listen to the pipe audiobooks.
So you do have a bit of a shopping list in your head.
Yes.
And it's all based off of where your family's from.
Actually, I'm two thirds Irish and English. So, and Scottish. So that, you know, the British Isles.
Yeah. So you stop by the Dunhill table, the Peterson table, and then you're all set.
I do remember once having lunch with Ulf Noltensmeyer and Per Hansen of the S Bank. And, you know, in Denmark, in those days, everybody was Danish. They were, you know, maybe a little Swedish, like the Iversons or whatever, but almost everybody. It was sort of like in an Asian country, like in China or Japan, where everybody is Japanese or everybody's Chinese. And I do remember, I think Obama said the same thing once. That I said, well, I'm this and that and that and this. And Per Hansen said, well, you're a mutt. That's right. That's what we are, a mutt.
Yeah. If you go to Chicago and don't come home with a pipe, does that mean it was a bad pipe show?
It's inconceivable. I've gone to every Chicago pipe show there's been, and I've always come home with a pipe. There was one time when it was 1999, and we had a problem with our house, and I was involved in litigation, and we were living in a temporary apartment while I was buying another house. And everything was in turmoil. And that show, I did not buy a pipe. And I sat with Yes and Bonnie, and I helped sell Yes's pipes. And at the end of the show, he handed me, I said, whoa, that's a beautiful pipe you're smoking. And he said, oh, you like this? He just lit it up. It's the first time he had just made it. He said, you can have it. And he gave it to me. And I was very touched. So then I turned around and bought the last pipe he had. So
I remember I think there was a West Coast pipe show where we were worried that your house was going to burn down.
Why? What happened?
I thought there was fires in the area or something, and you were.
I've had that happen where where our house was evacuated, and I remember talking to Sykes Wilford about it afterward. That the first thing I did was to get one of those giant black garbage bags that we use in the kitchen and stuff, and that we use, you know, to throw out the trash. And I just very carefully, without putting sleeves on, because I didn't have time for that, I just took all my super high-grade pipes and put them in this giant plastic bag and ran out and put it in the car trunk, and we drove away. I mean, we had gotten the animals out, and we don't have little kids anymore. And the grandkids aren't here, so.
Yeah. Humans, animals, and then pipes.
Yeah, pipes came next. Yep, yeah, that's right.
Well, and you also famously keep all your pipe tobacco in ice chests or coolers, not to keep them temperature cool, just to keep them protected from the elements. So you could have picked all that up and carried it out.
Yeah, but I figure as Lowell Ellis once said to me, if your neighborhood had a fire and your tobacco room went up in flames, man, that would be the best smelling fire in Southern California.
Being in California, would you have to put up a sign saying, warning, this fire could cause cancer?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably.
Cancer, you know, and what, happiness.
We had an electrician who was working in that room where I keep all these picnic cooler ice chests. And because the thing about those is, yeah, they don't cool it, but they do keep a constant temperature. Mm-hmm. And you really don't want to have your pipe tobacco that's cellared get exposed to extreme heat or cold. Cold is better than heat. But anyway, this electrician was like 12 hours, working in this room, firing everything. And he called me that night and said, man, I got a headache. I think it's that smell of tobacco. Rick, he can't, he's a friend. So I said, man, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. Take a couple of. I love
it. Yeah, that's funny.
I remember there's a caricature artist I used to syndicate named Julia Suits. And she told me, in fact, I commissioned her. I had this idea. I was reading about Einstein and about Hitler. And at that time, when they were alive and in Germany, Hitler was fanatical opponent of smoking. And Einstein loved his pipes. And I had that idea of having, so I contacted Julia. She was a New Yorker cartoonist also. And commissioned her to do a drawing of Hitler lecturing Einstein. And she did a brilliant drawing. I mean, look how close the face, if you look at that, that's in Search of Pipe Dreams. And look how close, you can tell immediately who's who. And there's just no, she's super professional. But she told me the story that as we were talking, she said, I think she grew up in New Orleans. And she said, I used to love on Saturday mornings, I'd go to the pipe store with my dad when I was a little girl. And I just loved that smell. I'd walk in and the aroma was just so wonderful. Anyway, that's me too. I love that aroma.
Before we wrap up, any idea when the new book will be out? Any time frame that we can look forward to?
No, it's going to be a couple of years. I'm really taking my time. I'm just thinking about things. I mean, what is the connection? So for instance, we saw as pipe smokers, how secondhand smoke and third hand smoke and all this silliness, the third hand smoke especially, yeah. It just became a tsunami against any kind of moderate cigar or pipe smoking. And so we've lost a lot. Of course, I'm not advocating inhaling some pipes or cigars or the average cigarette smoker who must inhale to get their nicotine frequently. And of course, that's bad for your health. Nobody would ever argue that's good for your health. But if you, have three cigars a week or three pipe bowls a week, or I think even one a day or one and a half a day, so to speak, one or two a day, but don't inhale. I just think there are so many benefits, and we're really facing an uphill battle here, but that's why it's so encouraging to see such enthusiasm for pipe collecting and for sophisticated taste in pipe tobaccos and things. It's just, I think it's very exciting.
I'm just reminded that the person that has a glass of red wine every night is not a chronic alcoholic.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, well, we'll look forward to the book. Look forward to seeing you in Chicago. Thanks for coming back on and hanging out with us.
Thank you, Brian. I do want to say on the book, I'm in no hurry. This one I'm just sort of mulling over. I didn't express the point that I wanted to make, which was, that when I saw the whole COVID lockdown and I saw, and then the information that came out with the Twitter files, for instance, about, you know, the source of COVID or the, how can I put it? There were so-called science had to have groupthink. It just only went one way. And it reminded me of what had happened to tobacco. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It's a complicated subject, and I'm sort of, and I don't want to go too far. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it sure has a lot of the same flavor to it. That's all I'm trying to say. That's an issue that I'm thinking about addressing. But it's something, so for instance, at the Chicago Pipe Show or your Las Vegas show, that's why I love getting together with pipe enthusiasts to have, or their Zoom calls, to have these conversations.
Yeah, anyway. And see where the conversations go, because the conversations in person are absolutely wonderful.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Rick, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in just a minute.
Have a look in your tobacco cellar. What do you see? Think of what you smoke, what you age, what you're drawn to in a blend that keeps you wanting more. That's your taste. And whether you know it or not, you've been leading that expedition since you first picked up a pipe. Just by smoking what you like and liking what you smoke. But the funny thing about taste, it changes, and you need a wide selection to accommodate it. We at Smoking Pipes know this, and you know it too. So whether you're searching for a tried and true favorite, or a singular boutique mixture, we're here to help you navigate the voyage of your evolving tastes. But you're still at the helm. Smoking Pipes, in faithful service of the hobby.
This is Internet Radio.
And we are back, and yeah, check out all of Rick's books and get the audio ones. The audio ones are a great listen, especially for those of us that are, word averse. Is word averse, is that something? Yeah, that'd be a good one. Yeah. All right. So check them out. All right, for music, springtime has sprung, and Sammy Davis Jr., has a song called Another Spring that he recorded back in the 50s. So here we go.
Another spring is on the way. Another April, another May.
The one and only and occasional pipe smoker, Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes!
You have new mail.
Yahoo!
And remember, mailbag comments or questions can be emailed to me, brian@pipesmagazine.com. That's B-R-I-A-N @pipesmagazine.com. Or post them on the Pipes Magazine Radio Show page at pipesmagazine.com. But we won't deal with those because I'm recording this on Saturday. But we will go back and grab some out of the past. Guy writes, a big hello, Brian. I'm sending this email combination, a draft of one that sat for months, and a new question having listened to your recent with Steve Fallon. Apologies as they're all over the shop. Here's the comment. The rest I'll save for later. He says, first about the discussion with Mr. Fallon, how do you recognize online an old war horse of a used pipe to pass on from a used but decent one, apart from being labeled unused and indications of external damage like the road hardened, wet and put up like an 18-year-old mule? All right. So what Guy's asking is, what do I look at as far as a pipe online that's been beat up or something like that? Well, you look in pictures, if it's been restored really well, it's going to be absolutely hard to tell, because if a restoration guy can put it back together and want, in really good shape. But if not, if it hasn't had a full restoration and just a cleaning, then I'm looking for charring on the rim. I'm looking for teeth marks on the stem. I'm looking to see if the stem is still the same shape, especially the button, because a pipe that's been chewed on a lot, the stem will be out of shape or the button will be almost gone. I'm looking for burn spots on the outside or discoloration of the pipe. I'm also looking at the junction of the ten of the stem in the shank to see if that's still even, because if that's not even, then that means that something's gone on. I'm looking for aftermarket repair bands, so a metal band around the shank or around the pipe that doesn't have the original maker's marks on it. So I'm looking at all that stuff. And then again, you also are, at times you're stuck buying the seller. All right. And let's see here. We have Ben Clark writes in, I was listening to one of your Rick Newcomb interviews recently. I love listening to Rick's stories about all the Danish greats. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think this was the Seven Questions for Seven Experts episode where he recommended the Vapor C&D exclusive. I'd never heard of it, but his description made it sound worth trying, and I trust his opinion. Long story shortish, I wound up getting about 3 pounds myself in bulk, and a bunch of guys on the Waze thread have since adopted it as a go-to daily smoke. One of the issues with C&D is they have so many blends, it's easy for a great blend like this to get lost. It's a Perique freak only blend. Yeah, I need to, and then he asks for my opinion on it. Thanks so much for what you do. I'm still re-listening to old episodes regularly as well as the new ones. Good job. Maybe I'm not the best listener, but I seem to pick up something new every time. Yeah, that's it. And then he said, P.S. Thank you for indulging my Sato questions on Instagram. Your answers have been quite helpful and informative. Cheers, Ben. Well, you're welcome. Yeah. And I'll put that blend on the list there. And the only thing I can say back to you is, with C&D having so many blends, remember when I found my favorite McClellan back in 2006 or seven, until they stopped making it, it was one of the least popular McClellan blends ever made. So there you go. And then Dr. Watson. Yeah. The lizard expert, which you'll hear more about that in the rant. He writes in and says, how's the lizard situation there in Florida? I'm envious because you likely have plenty of cool species right near your new home. Many of them are likely invasive species, but they are still cool. Florida is a great place to be if you're interested in nature and crazy people. Yeah, I fit right in. He says, I haven't written anything recently that you could share on the show, but it has been spot on. I'm sure I will think of some comment or interesting biological angle relating to pipes in the near future. I still look forward to hearing what you and your guests have to say every Tuesday night. We are starting to reorganize the long defunct San Diego Pipe Club, so there are some interesting things afoot here in South Texas. I'll keep you apprised of our progress if you're interested. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. Enjoy Florida. Doc Watson. Yeah. Yes, we're doing well. As far as the Pipe Club goes, make sure and post that in the Pipe Club page, the Pipe Club thing, the Pipe Club category in the forums on pipesmagazine.com, and go there and get hooked up with each other if you're in South Texas. So there you go. If you're starting a club, go to the forums, go to the clubs, put a post there. Over on Spotify, and these are in reverse order, so we'll go backwards. David said Adam Jeremiah Floyd, because we're still trying to figure out what the J and Adam Floyd's, what Adam Floyd's middle initial is. So for this week, I'm going to guess that it's Jermaine, because maybe one of Adam's parents was a big fan of the Jackson 5. So maybe it's Adam Jermaine Floyd. Nathan Clark says, going back like 3 weeks ago, on the note of the minor varietals, smaller blenders like Emerson Southern Forge use them. Smyrna, Kumengrad, others too. Amazing episode, Brian. My wife, a bio professor, enjoyed Jeremy's interview a lot. So there we go. That goes all the way back to the varietals. Richard says, another great show. Always enjoy John David Cole. So that'd be about a month and a half ago. Hobble, I can't read the last name, says, always enjoying Brian and John David bantering. I could resonate with John David when he talked about overwhelming new pipe smokers with enthusiasm. Yeah. Don't get him too confused. And then Hobble says, also great episode. Truett provided an interesting insight to the retailer side of the pipe world. Thank you. You're welcome. Substaggy says, a fantastic, relaxed conversation. I was going to say interview, but it felt more like a chat over a bowl. Number one pipe smoking radio show, bar none, regarding Chuck Stanion. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Chuck's always fun to talk to. And then going back, this is 8-9 months ago. He also wrote another great episode by the Godfather of Pipes, great advocate for our hobby, and all done with a good slice of humor. And he put the U in humor, so must have learned British English. Geyer wrote 7 months ago, love listening to the Pipes Magazine radio show when I'm working and have time for myself. Thank you. Zombie Cat said, great heartfelt remembrance of an influential artisan pipe maker, super song selection and awesome rants. That must have been when Sykes and I talked about Sato. Yeah, 7-8 months ago now. And Steven also wrote about 8 months ago, I thought the show was great. This is the first time I found this function. I've listened for a while and we met in Columbus once. Keep up the good work. Thank you. I sure will. All right, that's all we got. That's far enough back. I'll try to keep up with those, I promise. So again, emails, brian@pipesmagazine.com, Apple Podcast, and Spotify, ratings, reviews, questions, comments, always appreciated as well. And just a moment. You know what? We're going to rave about Florida.
We have arrived at 155. Missouri Meerschaum Company has been authentically crafting corncob pipes continually for 155 years. To celebrate, we're hosting a 155th anniversary celebration on Saturday, September 28th, 2024. There will be ticketed working plant tours, an exhibit on the corncob pipe industry by Skillet Fork Pipe Museum, a live podcast of the Gray Woody Show, a smoking tent for your enjoyment, and so much more. The 155th anniversary celebration will be held in conjunction with Downtown Washington's Fall Festival of the Arts and Crafts, with food, beverages, live music, and over 100 vendors. Visit our Facebook page at Cool Smoking Pipes for fun event updates and more information. Missouri Meerschaum Company, since 1869.
Thoid Flora, men's clothing, suits, shoes, ties, trousers, cufflinks, going up.
I beg your pardon, but on what floor might I find the luxury tobaccos, pipes, and accessories?
Well, I'll tell you, pal, if it's those things you's looking for, you need to visit tinbids.com.
Ah, yes, of course. You mean the pipe collector's auction site, right?
That's right, Mac. You can buy and sell pipes, accessories, and vintage and hard-to-find luxury tobaccos. You know, just like you were saying.
So I can sell my pipes and tobaccos, too? Why, that's just fine.
Yeah, you bet your life, buddy. So, what'll it be?
Can you take me to the floor where the computers are, then?
What's a computer? Visit tinbids.com, the pipe collector's auction site, and sign up today.
We are both of us really enjoying all the new wildlife that's around us. In addition to some very large birds of prey and very large carrion birds, better known as vultures, we've got about 25-30 acres of just heavy dense woods right near us. And there's all these birds that live up in there, and we'll see them fly over our house. You know, different kinds of hawks and then all the blackbirds and the big ones and the small ones. But we're also enjoying all the little lizards, and I like all the little lizards, the different colors and sizes of them. And these are the little tiny ones that, you know, they just run around in the plants and out, and hopefully they stay outside. Even in our screened-in pool porch area, they live in there, and I've got one that kind of walks by and looks at me while I'm sitting out there, and I've got a couple of them that talk to me, and I like when they start bobbing their heads at me, or they'll fluff out their little decorative thing to intimidate me, and I'll look at them. Yeah, but these are like 4 or 5 inches long. We love them. In fact, to the point we love them where we had the house treated for inside and around the edges for pesticide. And we specifically did not want any outside traps or anything like that because we didn't want to put these little lizards in the glue traps. And the lizards are fantastic because they eat all the other little insects that we don't want. In addition to that, we have seen a gator. There was a 5 or 6 footer that was walking. He was walking into a storm drain. I'm assuming it's a he just because it was a dark gator. I don't know. Couldn't tell. But anyway, he was just walking along the side of the road and going into a storm drain. So we've gotten to see an alligator out in the wild, and we've got an armadillo in the neighborhood that wanders around. So, yeah, we're just enjoying all the different wildlife and the different birds and colors and now I'm getting ready in a couple of weeks. I'm going to plant some flowers out in the flower beds that will hopefully out front of the house that will attract butterflies and, you know, try to make the house pretty and invite all the pretty parts of Mother Nature to come and play. So, yeah, shout out to Florida and the climate. Comments, questions, email me, brian@pipesmagazine.com. Again, please keep sharing out the Pipes Magazine radio show in all your Facebook groups and all your Instagram chatters and all that stuff. Thank you very much to Rick for joining me. Thank you all for tuning in, and until next time.
About the clouds when we're together, just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
We are a classy bunch.